Today, you're here to see Ellen and I talk about responsive design for SharePoint. So we're going to be speaking about how do we make SharePoint look snazzy on all sorts of different devices. So I'll just introduce myself and pass over to Ellen to kick off. So I'm Emma Woods, otherwise known as the Coding Cockatoo on Twitter. And I'm a front-end developer in Wellington at Provoke Solutions. So my day-to-day job is about making code to make things look cool. So it's pretty neat job. I'm pretty new to this industry. Until recently, I was designing, and I was an industrial designer. So I was designing wheelchairs. So I take my design thinking and apply that to code now. So I'll just pass over to Ellen here to kick off.
Thank you, Emma. I'm Alan Marshall. I'm a SharePoint MVP. I run SharePoint User Group in Auckland, and also a Microsoft VTSP. I haven't got any other letters, that's it. I'm Pommy Allen. Some people think it's Pomedian Allen. It's because I'm English and my name's Alan. That's enough kind of introductions. Just wanted to know who would consider themselves a SharePoint person in the room doing SharePoint stuff? Okay. And who's like front-end web developers? Right, okay. That's good. So everyone's awake. So could we get all the front-end web developers onto Emma's side and all the SharePoint ones over here with me? That'd be good. No, you can stay. You can stay seated. Right, just checking you're all awake. So realize we're right before lunch, so the sugar levels are going down. We're going to do some demos in this, but it's mainly sort of the concepts around responsive design. And I'm going to give you some tips of things that you should think about, things that won't work and things that will work in SharePoint as we go along. All right, so let's get started. We're going to basically break this into three. We're going to talk about what is responsive design. I'm going to cover why would you bother doing responsive design. And then Emma's going to take us through making a SharePoint site responsive in that order. So let's just be clear, what is responsive design? So it's sometimes called RWD, not to be confused with RTD. And it's about making your website work based on the device size and also orientation, right? So as more people are using mobile devices, it's important to target those devices and the sizes that they have. So here is just an example of some work that we've done for ANZ and how that actually adapts itself based on different devices. But there's also another way of looking at this, and this is adaptive design. Right? Now, they're slightly different, right? So responsive is purely going to take what you've got and it's going to rearrange it so it fits on the device that you're using. Now, adaptive will actually change the content. So it will actually say, well, we don't really want to run videos on mobile devices, so we'll swap out our video component for an image because people won't, in New Zealand, want to run video over their slow connections and it costs a fortune in data. So let's actually adapt the content based on maybe where the user is. So we could grab location, we might look at the speed of the device, or it could be the capabilities of the device. So slightly different, and you probably use the two of these together. So you probably use responsive and adaptive at the same time, right? So don't just think, well, I'm just gonna make what I've got and make it fit within the screen. You need to also consider how people use it and when they will use it, and if you need to swap content in and out. We're also going to talk about some things to consider in terms of the size of this content. So Emma's got some pointers on that as well, because small devices over slow connections, you don't want them to have to download a massive amount of data to squeeze it down to a screen this size. Right? So you need to give that some thought as well. So there's some examples. If anyone's got a device at the moment they want to have a play with, here's a couple to show you that are actually done on SharePoint. Now this Tapapa one is actually running on SharePoint 2007. So even though this talk is about SharePoint 2013, a responsive design, we wanted to point out that this is nothing new. It's not new to SharePoint 2013 that suddenly we can do responsive design. The key thing is it's actually easier to do responsive design. So in the past, if you were trying to adapt SharePoint, the look and feel of it, you'd have to need a SharePoint developer to crack open SharePoint Designer and create a bunch of layout pages and master pages and that sort of thing. So now what's changed, and of course provokesolutions.com is an adaptive responsive design, is that we can now take what the front-end developers do, grab that and actually use it straight away inside SharePoint. So we don't need a SharePoint developer per se to be able to take a front-end design and actually put it into SharePoint. We can actually take the raw HTML and pretty much just paste it in with a bit of tweaking. Sort that out. I was just going to show you quickly, remember to press the right buttons. We actually get Emma to log back in again. Let's go start. Thank you. So this one, Nancy demoed this as part of the SharePoint conference last year. So this is Marshfield Clinic. This is running on 2013 as well. I just wanted to point something out in this particular one. And also I was going to show you the best way to test this. Now, has everyone taken a responsive design site and grabbed their browser and gone like this with it? Right? Well, actually, no one's going to do that because they've either got a device this size or they've got a device this size. Right? So when you're testing it, there's some useful tools you can use. So in Firefox, one of my colleagues actually pointed this out, there's a responsive design view, right? Now you could use F12 and Internet Explorer and you can change the sizes there, but this is quite a nice tool because it also enables you to do touch type things as well. So I can go, well, what does this look on a 320 by 480, right? So I can actually see that actual size and actually play around with it and see what it might feel like for the end user. Now, one thing I wanted to point out here, can you see that? I could zoom in if you want. But it's 303 kilobytes for that top image, right? Now that's actually quite big if I was just using my mobile device, right? If I change this out to a bigger one, so we go back to what might be a desktop size and review the page, this info, it's still 303 kilobytes, right? So what they haven't done is modify the image for a smaller image when somebody's using a smaller device, right? So consider that as well. It works great in America. This is an American site. It's Wisconsin, something or other. So, I mean, that's fantastic. But if you're not actually in America on super fast, high speed connections, then think about swapping out images with smaller sizes and also things like JavaScript and CSS you need to consider as well while you're doing it. Anyway, you can go to marshfield.org and have a play around with that while you're sitting there watching me and pretend at the same time. Right, let's go back to the presentation. That was a quick intro to what it is and just one of those tools that you could possibly use. So the next thing is why. So just because you can doesn't mean you should in this particular case. There are some reasons why you would do it and some reasons why you wouldn't. Right? Now, one reason why you would do it is if you're actually targeting an internet site. So if you're building an internet site on SharePoint, then you'd consider the fact that based on these, this is actually New Zealand statistics done by UT universities. There's been a lot of statistics of the rest of the world, and they're pretty much following the same trend. The US probably quicker towards mobile and tablet, but even here, we can see that sort of mobile phone usage is like catching up and tablets to the traditional desktops and laptops. So certainly if you're building a website today, you definitely consider responsive. Right? And of course, if you've got your Xbox Ones, you might use a game console to browse the internet, or smart TVs. But in smart TVs, you've got a much bigger scale. So what do you do with that? Because now you're kind of, well, how do I scale it out? Or how do I swap things to work on a good smart TV? Some other questions you need to ask yourself. First of all, is there a real business need? So if we, an internet site's fairly obvious, but an intranet site isn't so obvious, right? So first of all, do you need as a business to be able to access your intranet on different devices, right? Now you might find you've got a desktop and you've got some people with some tablets. They've all gone and bought their Surface 3s, that's great. It'll probably fit. But you might have iPads and things like that that maybe you've got to adapt the site because some Apple fanboys want to use iPads for some reason rather than Surfaces. So you need to identify first the business need to do this, right? Because at the end of the day, we're going to talk about cost in actually implementing this sort of thing. You're going to have to tie it back to some real business need and some return on that investment. So, you know, how much is it actually costing us to do this responsive design And was there a real business need we can tie this to go, yes, that offered value? The second one is probably obvious in some ways, that if you've got a mobile workforce, they probably are using smaller devices. They're not going to carry their desktop around with them to use. They potentially use a phone. But I would consider, if you've got a workforce that's mobile, is there a specific task they need to do? Do they need to access your whole intranet? Or do they just need to fill a form in and have some workflow kick off? Right? Because if it's not the whole intranet, then also possibly don't do it. They might need access to documents, but then there's things like OneDrive apps for business, so they can sync the documents down. There's Office on the device. So if they just need to look through documents and review them and or approve them, that sort of thing, do you still need access to your whole intranet? Probably not, right? So consider that as part of your planning. Then there's the type of site. Now, this is key, because if you're doing anything other than a publishing site in SharePoint, you're going to have problems. So the web publishing infrastructure is adequately designed to do responsive capability, right? So if you're putting that on your site, great. You can adjust the pages and the master pages and everything else. Where you're going to struggle is when you start looking at some of the other out-of-the-box templates. The community site template, for instance, has a pre-arranged setting of where components are on the page. Very hard to adjust it to fit on a device. Same with the blog site, that does the same thing. And some of these you can't even inherit and create your own. So in some ways you could take a discussion board and you could fit that in. But if you want an actual community site, you've got to use that template, because there's some things at the back end tied to the ID of the template. So if you create a new one and call it something else, some stuff doesn't work, which isn't very handy. So the type of site. So what you might find is you end up with the top level of your intranet might be responsive because you're using the web publishing infrastructure. But when you get down to like a team site, maybe you're just using the mobile view of the team sites, or you're saying to people, just use the apps on your device for OneDrive and things. Now, internet sites, you're definitely going to use web publishing infrastructure, so it's not a problem. It's just an intranet scenario as it can be. And then it's the real device and browser needs is you can get different browsers that do some curious things when you're doing these responsive sites. So consider how many different browsers you're going to have, because that's also going to add to your costs. But if the CEO wants to use some particular device, then you're just going to have to build it. But then again, he's the most important person in the world. Right. So some considerations, and this is where Emma steps in to tell you more about things you consider before you start.
Thanks, Alan. So I'm a front-end developer, so I get a bunch of requirements and I can look at the design and do the front-end. So there's a whole bunch of other things that happen before it gets to me. We're looking at the architecture and the content strategy behind what we're actually making. So there's a whole other presentation, but a lot of that has to do with how you're going to deal with it responsively as well. But just two things that are quite key to think about throughout the whole design and front-end time is the content strategy. So that becomes a lot about adaptive design. So, for example, if you've got an art gallery, you might show a map on the mobile view because you're assuming that people are out and about and they want to see a map of how to get somewhere quickly. But if you are looking at it on a desktop for an art gallery, you might see big, high-resolution images because people want to see what they're going to go and visit. So it's that kind of content strategy that you're thinking about of, and the adaptive design behind that. And also there's the technical constraints. So we can't forget about the technical constraints while we're designing because there's no point in designing something which is going to be not cost-effective to actually build. So it's that collaboration between the designers and developers that needs to go on there. So if you're really lucky, you'll get an opportunity to build something from scratch, and you'll be able to play with the idea of the mobile phone first, and the tablet, and the desktop. Because what you want to be doing realistically is designing mobile first if you have the opportunity. But a lot of the time you're not lucky enough to have that opportunity, and you're going to have a desktop site which someone comes to you and says, hey, let's make this mobile. So in SharePoint, just up here, we've got the standard Contoso SharePoint website. And I'll just go through some considerations that you have to think about with SharePoint to make that mobile. So we've got the sweet bar and the ribbon. So are you going to be even showing that on a mobile? Is there a purpose for it? You could use a bit of adaptive design there. The search bar. The search bar, because in 2013 there's a better capability there for search than ever has been before, perhaps you could use the search function as navigation. Still have your navigation, but make that more prominent. So you'll also be thinking about above the scroll. So just like in the old days when you got a newspaper, if you remember those things, you would see a newspaper on a stand, and the really important information that the newspaper wanted to put out there for you to buy was always above the fold. So what we want to be thinking about is what's above the scroll. So also in this instance here of putting up content on the front page, you could be adaptive to the user in SharePoint. So you could say, well, this user is in finance, so they want news about finance, or perhaps they want something else up there compared to somebody in the design team. So navigation is really important. And as I spoke about before with the search capability, you also need to think about how you're going to navigate around this. So a pretty standard thing these days is the hamburger icon. So up the top right-hand corner of that mobile view, you see the hamburger icon. So you click on that, and then out comes your search. And also you can use that search area for tree navigation. So perhaps you're going deeper into that side navigation. So that navigation could come from above, below, right, left, however you want to make that happen. So you could also use a sitemap. I mean, that could be a really easy way of getting people around on the mobile, get people places fast. So you'll also be thinking about device quirks. So you've got the site on your phone, and that's all cool, but what's going to happen when it's actually on different devices? So here you'll see the keyboard on a Windows 8 phone. It takes up a little bit of real estate. So what are you going to be seeing that's behind, what are you going to lose that's actually behind that keyboard? And just test it out on different devices. For example, this is the drop-down box on a Windows 8 phone. So it actually, you click the drop-down and it completely takes out and wipes out everything behind it, and people can get quite lost as to where they are. So just think about those little things. And just as a contrast, that's an iPhone version of a drop-down. So finally, if you all thought that you could come along and get the answer, the magic bullet answer to tables in SharePoint, sorry to say, we don't have it. Tables and document libraries and editing views, that can be all really difficult to deal with in SharePoint. And when it comes to being responsive, this is the kind of thing that you'll end up seeing, is tables will fall off the page. So how do you get them back on the page in a way that's going to be effective, that your content is still going to have the same meaning? So you could do a bunch of different things, which could take a front-end developer weeks to do. You could do some simple things, like the percentage of the column widths could all squeeze up, but then you've got all this really long information. You could have columns stacking underneath each other, but that's changing the meaning of what you're really looking at. You could have toggle functions, so actually toggling those columns open and close, but that could be quite tricky too. So a really simple way that we've looked at this is, number one, let it take over the whole page, because at least you've got the widest real estate there. So removing any sort of quick links on the left-hand side, and putting a humble scroll bar on there. So it's a really simple option. It doesn't take much code. And just really ask yourself about those kinds of pages, if it's worth the investment to do something fancy. So designing it. So we've finally got all these requirements, and we've thought about what we're doing, and we're going to start designing it. So I'm going to take you through sort of a little sneak peek window into what the designers will be doing. So wireframing, that's where people tend to kick off. And you could do this just by sketching with a pen and paper or maybe with your stylus on your surface. Whatever way you do it, basically wireframing is removing the styling from a site. It's thinking about the functionality. It's not putting colours and images and fonts on there so that we confuse or make people want to start designing things. We're really looking at what that function is and the hierarchy of different functions. So there's all sorts of different tools that you can use. This shot here is actually a wireframe template that you can get for Balsamic. So Balsamic is a wireframing tool, and you can use it online as well, which is quite good for sharing with clients. But there's all sorts of different tools that you can use. We use Axure quite a lot. Axure is probably one of the more expensive ones, but it has a whole lot of other functionality as well. It can generate HTML and throw up prototypes, and I'll show you a little bit of that in a moment. So really, it's just looking at something from a functional point of view. And it's not about prototyping either at this point. It's not about taking a Photoshopped thing into the browser and start clicking about and having a look at how people react just yet. So you'll also be thinking about comparing different screens at this stage and saying, so how is this content going to be displayed on different screens? Just as simply as this, is just lining up different elements. So I'll just quickly switch over, hopefully. So I'll just quickly show you, this is Axure, so this is what we use a lot. And this has a really neat function in it that just up the corner here, you can see I've got a 1366 wide pixel view, a 768 wide, and a 480 wide. And what that gives us the ability to do is make a wireframe in desktop view, and tablet view, and mobile view. And another really cool feature about this is that we can press play and it will open up in the browser. And we can start playing around with what that could look like. So there's your tablet view and your mobile view coming. There we go. So that's sort of a bit of a think about the considerations and your content. But there's also technical considerations that we want to be thinking about. We want to be thinking about perhaps a grid-based layout. So this example here, we've overlaid a grid. So it's a column layout. It's putting the content inside columns so that the content starts to stack inside each other when those columns move around. When those columns get wider, the content gets wider. When they get smaller, the content gets smaller. And in this example, the mobile phone actually only has one column, so it's getting that content to stack. It's putting all the content into one. So at the end of the slide, if you have a look online later, there's a CodePlex project that we've used to get Bootstrap, which is a grid-based layout, into SharePoint. So you can download that and have a play with getting Bootstrap grid-based layouts into SharePoint. So we put together just some wireframes, which you just saw before, the mobile view, the tablet view, and the desktop view. And you'll see there that we're just taking into consideration those things that I mentioned before, that hamburger navigation, the sweet bar has actually disappeared there, the hierarchy of features and stacking content. And then finally, we get to do some visual design. And that's when everything starts to come alive. So you'll see here, we're also thinking about the hierarchy of content, and we're doing that through colour and contrast. We're creating some consistency between areas so that when people are looking at the navigation bar, it's the same colour when it's at the top as it is in the hamburger area, so they know that that's probably going to be the same thing. And at this point, you can take those images and start to prototype with that too. You can throw it into a program like Axure or InVision and actually start putting some hot points on those Photoshop files so that people can click around and start to interact with it and just see how people are going to react to it. So building it, I'm just going to pass back over to Ellen to kick off on some cool new features in 2013 when it comes to building it.
Thanks, Emma. Where are we doing? Oh, good. On time. Right, so there's a couple of other things you can do in SharePoint that may mean that you don't need to use a responsive design, and some options that are kind of hybrids between the two. So first of all, to cover SharePoint service, so really what I'm talking about is mainly the kind of on-premise type scenario, because there's some other things in online I'm going to cover up in a second. So we still actually have Classic View.
Anyone love Classic View?
Classic View, splendid. But it's really only focused around a site. So again, it's that collaboration site. I need to see my list, my libraries. You know, maybe you're working on a project and that might be your views, you know, because you're focused on one task, one site. Kind of handy. Microsoft introduced this view, which is the contemporary one, and that it looks a bit easier. It's easy to use on a touch device because the links are not so close together. But I didn't really add any more to it. You can't go browse around as such. It doesn't show the page or the controls or anything of interest on the page. It's just again the sites, the libraries, the lists, that sort of thing. Right. But again, it depends on the task you're doing. And then, of course, is the full screen UI. So you can switch the device and go show me the desktop view, which is what we get to when we need to look at, well, how do we make this responsive? Because obviously that doesn't fit very well on the screen. So you're going to have to do something about it. Now, it's slightly different in SharePoint Online, because Microsoft has started building in more mobility capability into the online product. Right? Now, not so much, don't get this confused with the Office 365 public website. That is very tricky to make responsive because it doesn't have the whole web publishing infrastructure, right? So not as easy. But from a usage perspective on a device, if you're just trying to access your OneDrive and your sites and that sort of thing, it actually comes up with this if you access it with a device. So if you've got a Windows phone or an iPhone and you can just browse to your My Site on Office 365, you'll find it comes up with this view now. You don't see the old one that used to be the actual page. This is the new one. And this is only recent that they brought this out. In fact, halfway through doing this presentation, as we were putting together, they updated it. We went, oh, well, we better put that in, just to show you what it looked like. The other thing on this, and you see just on the left, it says go to. Right? When you click on that, which I didn't manage to get a screenshot before this, it actually comes up with like six blocks. To say, what do you want to do? Do you want to do sites? Do you want to do OneDrive? Do you want to do whatever? And then it gives you quick jump points, right? So actually, that might suit your needs, right? So consider that. But don't expect it to come on your on-premise version of SharePoint. Now, I'm not even sure it'll actually appear in a service pack. It might not appear till the next version, right? So if you are considering you've got a lot of mobile people and a lot of mobile workforce, then maybe moving, say, to OneDrive for Business or something, 365, might be a better way to go, right? Because then you get the capability today without having to build anything. You can also, if you do go into the site and you want to switch between those, they've actually added this mobile view link at the bottom. So you can actually go, oh, what would this look like in a mobile view? So you don't have to actually have a mobile to test it out and see what it'd be like. Okay, so you can switch between the two. There was one more thing I wanted to say on that. Can't remember what it was. I'll move on. The other option still is device channels. So it's aware of device channels. Cool. 1, 2, 3, 4. Right. Anyone use device channels? Cool. Just for different devices or for... Yeah. So device channels, they're purely targeted based on the user agent, right? So you can still fudge your user agent and pretend to be something else in your web browser. But what it will do is say, okay, if this device is a smartphone, Right? Or you can get more specific and say an iPhone or Windows Phone or whatever it is. I want you to use this set of master pages and page layouts. Right? So this is purely a web publishing infrastructure scenario, because there is no such thing as different device channels on a collaboration page. Right? So you're really saying, I want to target this device with particular style sheets and pages. And you can use this as well in a hybrid scenario with responsive, right? Because going all the way from if you've already got a site and you want to make it responsive, it's more challenging than starting from fresh. So what you might say is, well, let's create a device channel that is the desktop and tablet, because then I only need to deal with being responsive between here and here, right? So I haven't got too far to change some CSS to get it to work. And then create a device channel for all other mobile devices. And then build specific master pages and style sheets for those, right? That could simplify what you need to do in terms of changing what you have today, and is probably cheaper, right, than trying to rewrite the whole of your site to cope with it. So still consider this. This is still an option. As far as I know, it's not going away. It's still going to be there for future releases. And it does work in on-premise and in Office 365. You still get the capability. Right, last one that's of interest in 2013 is image renditions. Right, so I don't know if you know, it's in the old image libraries, you used to upload an image and it would create you a web version and a thumbnail version. And actually the settings for those were hidden somewhere in the site. You had to open up SharePoint Designer and go properties and change it in there. But now it's actually on a site level. So what I can do is go into, if I go to an image, I can go in and edit renditions for the site. And by default, it has these four, right? And they're actually set in the site. So you can just go to site settings, image renditions, and go, well, actually, the ones we're using on our different size tablet and mobile phone, you know, are these sizes, right? And it will actually then change it immediately so that they're all matching those sizes, right? Now, the other cool thing is it actually allows you to crop them as well. So if your size for your tablet is a wider, shorter one, you can actually say what part of the image you want to use. And then you just do it through the web browser, which is quite nice. Although it makes a decision for you, but that might not be appropriate. I was doing some demo to Auckland Council about how it worked, and it took their dog walking thing, and then all it showed is this woman's legs at the bottom, when actually no dog. Didn't seem very interesting. So you might want to go in and recrop the images. But the problem is that doesn't then naturally take those image renditions and use them when you're on different size devices, right? It's really for when you're editing the page, you can say, oh, my roll-up image is the smaller one, and you don't have to create that different version of the image, right? But we thought about it and said, well, actually, they're already created, and you can potentially use them, and you can avoid that issue that other website had, where they're all 303 kilobytes, right? So we actually got one of our devs to write some code, and I didn't think it was worth showing you, but we published it up on Coding Cockatoo's site. So you'll be able to get the presentation afterwards and download the link. We've just put it up there. And all it does is, so this is being adaptive. And when you get to adaptive, you're starting to write some jQuery, right? But you can just take this code and just adjust it a bit and it'll work absolutely fine. And what it does is it looks for all of the images in the page that are of a particular class, right? And then what it does is it says, well, based on the size of this screen I'm on, do I want to use image rendition 1, 2, 3, or 4? Or you could add more to that if you needed to, and then it swaps the image out. And then if you can see it as you just make the screen go in and out, which image it's actually going to use, right? Really simple. Because if you're actually building a website design, you can do this with CSS, and we're going to show you some code later. But you need to know what the images are. But in this case, if someone's adding in news items and things like that, you don't know what the images are. So this is where we come up with this solution to leverage the image renditions. Bonewins use it. We should probably put it up somewhere else. But tell us if you think it was cool.
Right.
Now I'm going to hand back to Emma to talk about some approaches to implementing it.
Thank you. All right, so some code approaches. So it looks like there's quite a few people in the room, actually, that do a little bit of front end. So hopefully this will be helpful. It's quite high level. So something really cool that I love about code is, so I come from an industrial design background. I used to design wheelchairs. So if you design an adult-sized wheelchair and the next day the boss comes in and says, hey, how about you make that into a child-sized wheelchair? It's just not really that possible. It's going to probably take another 6 months of development. But with code, you can just go in there and make a few tweaks, and it's magic. So there's two approaches that you can take to coding responsive sites. You could code mobile first or desktop first. It's sort of generally recognized in the industry that you want to be coding mobile first. It's the better way to do it if you look at it from a point of view that a mobile phone, for example, has less processing power than a desktop. So you want the smallest amount of code loading on your smaller screens. So what you'll end up doing with mobile first is creating a style sheet, and then you're adding code to that and building up to get up to the desktop. And if you do it the other way around, you end up with that situation that actually you've got the smallest amount of code on your desktop and the most amount of code on your mobile. So we don't really want to be doing that. Some sort of words around that you might hear are progressive enhancement. So you're progressively enhancing the site from a mobile to a desktop. And you might hear the words graceful degradation too, which is talking about just degrading the site down to something that's on mobile. So I'll just take you through three approaches when it comes to code that you could take with responsive. So there's fluid, there's breakpoints, and we're going to look at a bit of bootstrap too. So fluid is percentage based. So if you're looking at a piece of content, it's taking up 100% width of the screen. It doesn't matter what size screen that you're on, it's always going to take up 100%. Same with 50, whatever percentage that you're going to use. And so basically, the smaller the screen, the smaller the element. And so here's some code of a fluid image, for example, of you've got a max width of 100%, that's always going to take up the whole screen. And putting that height auto on there means that it's always going to be the right kind of scale there. And you want to be taking this approach with fonts and icons as well. Anything really that you might have traditionally put pixels on, you want to be trying to put something like M. So EM, I don't just like it because it's like my name, it's a measurement of a percentage. So usually what you'll find is a site at 100% font size will be about 16 pixels equals 1 M. So that's kind of a difficult range to play with in your brain all the time. So if you put something like 62.5% onto your body, what that gives you is a better scale to work with. So what you'll find is you'll have a scale of something like 10 pixels traditionally is 1 M, and you'll get 1.2 Ms is 12, 1.3 Ms is 13 pixels. So it's just a little bit easier to deal with. And you can do this with icons too, and I'd really encourage you that if you've got flat colour icons, to be using SVG fonts. So we don't want to be using images and calling upon them for our icons, because when you get up to a bigger screen, they're going to be pixelated. So you want those SVG icons. So screen sizes. It's not just about the size though, it's about what you do with it. So it's about the quality of what you're looking at as well. So we're not looking at screen size, we're looking at resolution. And traditionally, you'll see up there some resolutions that we would work with quite a lot. Up until a year or so ago, that was pretty standard. The 1024 pixel wide, the 800 pixel wide for a laptop perhaps, 768 pixel for a tablet, and 320 for a phone. So what's really interesting about what's happening now is if you just watch those pixels, they're now up at about this range. So if you see in the red there, it's changed a wee bit. So desktop is now generally 1920 pixels wide. those high definition phones that you've all got. Suddenly, this phone here, which traditionally might have been 320 pixels wide, is, I think it's now 768. So that's actually the resolution of what traditionally a tablet would have been. And the tricky thing about that is that you're going to end up, if you're a device and you're calling out to this code and saying, hey, I'm a mobile phone, you could potentially have that problem with you're ending up serving up the tablet version on that phone because it's saying, but you've got a pixel of 768 wide, so you must be a tablet. I'm going to give you the tablet view. So you have to be really careful about doing that sort of thing. And perhaps using the device channels that Ellen talked about earlier would be a way of getting around that in some cases with those high definition phones. So the idea of calling out to the resolution of what you're looking at. So here you've got perhaps a laptop, 1366 pixels wide, and this media query here is saying, hey, if you're a container, I want to serve you up at 60% wide. So that's a little bit of a hybrid approach that's using the fluid that we were talking about before. And you can use this for landscapes as well. So people are looking at something on their tablet, but also they're probably going to turn it around. So how is that going to affect that? So here, the container might become 100% wide on landscape. And you can also use this for images. So what Ellen was saying before about the image renditions, that's a great way to work with images that people may be uploading onto your site that you don't really have a lot of control over. But if you have an image like a header or logo or background image, a way that you might want to be controlling the resolution of that is through this code. So here you've got a media query saying, hey, if you're 1200 pixels wide, I'm going to serve up a banner.jpg. But if you're 1366 pixels wide, I'm going to serve up banner large JPEG. And finally, Bootstrap. So there's lots of reasons why you wouldn't and why you would use Bootstrap. We put together a bit of a demo just to test out with ourselves of how you'd use Bootstrap in SharePoint. It's not too hard to get in. You can get a Codeplex project that we've got the link in here later that you can get and get those Bootstrap files into SharePoint. It's well documented, so if you've got a lot of dev resource that doesn't necessarily have a lot of experience in front end, then it's going to be easier for them to look up what classes they need to use. It comes with some code snippets for device specific code. There's all sorts of different things with it that are quite neat that comes with it. But there's also reasons why you wouldn't use it, and if you have got a lot of front end resource, then wouldn't necessarily recommend it. If you've got the time to actually be writing it yourself, you're going to end up with a smaller style sheet to load. Bootstrap can become quite heavy if you're not careful about it. So here you've got a little snippet out of those wireframes that I showed before, and you'll see that if I overlay these columns, this is how that grid layout kind of works on a code level. So you've got the mobile view on the left and the tablet view in the middle and the desktop view on the right. So you'll see that the red columns change from 4 in the desktop down to 5 in the tablet and 8 for the blue area down to 7. So there's classes that you attach for this kind of work. So you end up with classes which say col-lg, which is large, col-md medium, col-sm small, and you attach those column widths that you want the content to fit into. And if you look at the HTML, this is kind of what you're going to be seeing. So that blue HTML is calling out and saying, hey, for this kind of content, when it's on a large screen, I want you to show it in 8 columns wide. If it's on a small screen, I want you to show it in 1 column. And if you are playing with things that a visual designer has given you and it doesn't quite fit into the grids, then you can start looking at something and looking at nested grids. So When I'm talking about grids, I'm not talking about tables. I'm not saying go out and code in tables, because we don't want to be putting tables in tables. That's not a good thing. But this is nested columns. This is nested divs. So you can start to play with that idea. And that's sort of what that code looks like. And as I said before, Bootstrap has some kind of cool classes that come with it. So if we're talking about adaptive design, and we want to be hiding content perhaps on the mobile, when it gets down to a mobile size, when it gets down to that SM, that small level, we could put a class on it that says dot hidden small. So actually that element's going to hide when it goes onto the mobile. And there's the opposite here too. You can have dot visible. And finally, tables. So Bootstrap has a class called table-responsive, and that's going to give you the scroll bar that we were talking about before. To get that on there, wrapping around all your tables, you're going to have to use a little bit of JavaScript, but that's sort of what it ends up looking like. And basically what that's doing is putting an overflow scroll on there, so you can scroll with those tables. And just something to note is that SharePoint doesn't naturally scroll, so if you're having trouble, have a look and play around with putting scroll on body as well. Cool. So that's your code. Now, while you're doing all of that, you have to remember to test and test some more. Because there's no point in doing all of this work and then handing it over to the testers at the end and then them going, oh, but this doesn't work on this device and that device and this device. So try to test as much as you can while you're coding. Just quickly flicking into something like this program. It's on the web. You put your URL in, and you can sort of see the differences of what's happening on different screen sizes. So this one's mattkersley.com. There's all sorts of ones out there. You can use the emulators in your browsers. So earlier, Alan was showing in Firefox the responsive emulator. And if you were just using Windows Phone, you could use the emulator in Visual Studio, which is kind of neat. But you can't really compare that to using it on a real device. So try to test on real devices as much as you can. I know that that's going to be an overhead to go out and buy every new fancy device, but it's a good excuse to ask your boss for some new phones. Because you want to be testing for things like keyboards and drop-downs and how that works. So that's me for now. I'll pass back to Alan just to wrap up. And
thanks, Emma.
There you go.
Right, so we thought we'd put together some challenges that we essentially had on this journey to creating this particular site. Who's sort of the design manager? We haven't really mentioned it yet. That's a few. Okay. So Microsoft introduced a design manager in 2013 as a way of enabling web designers to be able to basically publish HTML and have it then convert to master pages and page layouts and everything else. So it kind of split the two apart. And that was their attempt to get rid of SharePoint Designer and the SharePoint skills and enable web designers to take what they have and publish it into SharePoint. But there's some taking that design manager package, although you can export it and import it again somewhere else, I suggest you only use that for prototyping. Because there are some issues with it when you start moving it around and it recreates objects and you end up with lots of versions and things don't publish, and I could probably give you a list, it'll probably go across both my hands. So by all means, use the design manager whilst you're a web front end designer trying to work out how things are going to work in the site, but then you probably want to take that and give it to a developer in Visual Studio to then package it up and deploy it properly. So the challenge with the device types, which Emma's pretty much covered off, is you're going to have to test it on the different devices. There's not emulators for all of them, right? So you need to ask for that iPhone 6, the latest one with the big screen. So you've got to test it on that, right? There's additional effort. Now, when we looked at this, we said, well, how much longer did it take us to do like this responsive design in the sites we've done compared to how we do it normally, right? Now, if you purely take the effort to say, well, this is the desktop and I've got to do a wireframe for this one and a wireframe for the mobile, that takes 15% longer, right? So you've added 15% effort to your just doing the design, right? Then you've got to test it works, right? So then you've added a percentage to what it would normally take to test it, right? Then the devs potentially have got to then take some of that and make sure that works with the rest of the site. So you've got to test that as well. And then you've got to test it on multiple devices at the end. Right? So actually, to do a responsive design can take you anywhere from 15% longer to 30, 35%, depending on what your processes are. Now, if you add that up, like 35% extra on a website that's costing you 100 grand, you know, is it worth the 50K or whatever it might cost you extra on top? I know that's 50% on a regular maps. But, you know, consider not just how long it's going to take you to design it, but the whole end-to-end as to what the value proposition is to be able to do it. And then last of all, intranets. At the moment, I'm kind of saying I don't recommend doing it for intranets. I would look at other options, you know, whether those mobile views will work, potentially writing an app. If it's a very specific task that people need to do on a mobile, an app might be better than actually customizing your whole site so that it works on different sizes. Right? And if you're not using the publishing infrastructure and you're using an out-of-the-box template, you're going to struggle anyway. Right? So today, if someone asks you to build their intranet as a responsive design, just say no. Right? It'll save you a lot of effort and time. So things to remember, RWD, not RTD. But also consider adaptive in that. So when people talk about responsive web design, go back and say, do you also mean adaptive? Do you want me to swap all this stuff in and out based on the device? We talked about the quirks earlier. And then, but it's really about future-proofing it as well. So as we go forward, there's going to be all different other size devices. So whenever you build it, you know, make sure you can quickly, you know, change in the way people use devices. More people might use TVs and all sorts of other things. So consider that when you start, so you don't sort of lock yourself in and can't change it later. So resources, we had a lot of resources. There's some like top resources. So there's the, you can go and look at the Axure stuff. There's a whole page on that, the mobile touch experience that they've just launched, so go dig that out. And design manager stuff and the image renditions. Plus also there's the link in there to download our little bit of jQuery that fixes that up, which is there. And that's probably, Bootstrap. That's a really, if you really want to get started, When I started looking at this, I actually just went and downloaded that Bootstrap one from Coplex and just chucked it in the site. You just install it. It's a sandbox solution. And then you go, and then you just start playing like this because that's what you do. And it does put the hamburger in for your menu and all sorts of other stuff. So it gives you a really good feel of how it works and you can start from that as a start point. Then we've got a bunch of ways to test this. So we talked about the different sites that you could go to, but of course check out things inside your own web browser already and pick your favorite tool. There's no good one, just whatever your favorite one is. And that's it. And then there's these other resources, of course. Don't forget to sign up for Channel 9 stuff, where we get a lot of stuff from. Right, related content. My session tomorrow. You definitely want to come to my session tomorrow. There you go. Right, and there's also some hands-on labs as well. And of course, it's lunch. That's a good resource, it's lunch. Because I realise you're probably all sort of sitting there and sugar levels are going down. So. Right, and that concludes our session. Don't forget to complete the evaluations. I hope you enjoyed our session.